Thank you so much for joining Dental Marketing Theory, a podcast by Gary Bird. In today's episode, Gary talks with Eric Morin, CEO of Towers Leadership. Gary and Eric talk about the foundations of leadership and how you can apply it to your life. As always, please make sure to like, subscribe, share, and leave a comment, as all of those things really help to get the word out about Dental Marketing Theory. Hope you enjoy today's show.
All right, Eric, we are live. Thanks so much for coming on. I'm really excited to have you today and talk through what you are offering to the dental community. Now, before we go any further, though, if you're listening to this, please leave us a quick review. It really, really helps us out. It takes you 5 seconds. This whole podcast is free. So if you can do that for me, don't make me beg. Leave a review. That helps us out. So, Eric, so good to have you today. And I wanted to chat with you. We've never met before, so this is actually our first time meeting, but I'm excited. I was looking at your website and everything that you guys offered to the industry, and I'm actually excited to really learn about what you guys are doing. So could you tell us a little bit about what you guys do, how you do it, who you serve?
I appreciate, first of all, having me on. I'm excited to be here. Glad to have this opportunity. Tower Leadership, we're about 6 years old. We serve dentists that are vast majority are dentists that are moving to a kind of a hyper growth. That would probably be the best way to say it is individuals that are looking to really compete in this marketplace, this ever changing dental marketplace. It seems like we're in today. So the organizations that are looking to lead, that means grow the organization, grow the C-suite, grow the depth of it, learn how to invest in marketing, invest into their businesses and their operations and where to put capital. That's kind of a quick version, but really trying to move the needle. So those individuals that are ultra hyper growth focused and really want to move the needle. Those are our people. Those are the people we love to work with.
That's awesome. Same with us. And so do you, how did you get into dental?
That's a good question. I was doing business consulting for companies up to about 30, 40 million myself as an independent. And I married a dentist, but you know, for years in dental school, she kept talking about crowns and bridges and all this stuff. And I was like, stop talking about dentistry. And then one day she said, stop doing all this other stuff and help me build a dental practice. So I was like, okay, that's fine. And I always tell people, you know, one of the greatest things was that I didn't know what I didn't know, which is I, as an MBA, I just thought you grew and scaled a business. I didn't know better. And so we just went from zero, no patients to a multi-million dollar, multi-doctor practice right away. And then I started getting grabbed by other people and they said, you know, there's a lot of people that need this help. And before you know it, I'm working with thousands of doctors all over the United States and outside the United States. And I came into it. I think there was also an idealistic part of me that I was watching as, because I had all my investment licenses as well as being an MBA. And I was watching financial advisors and CPAs tell individuals to pull their money out of their dental practice and go put it somewhere doing 5%. Or I'd watch them sell it off. We'd have $1 million dental practice that was getting 30%, which is 300 grand. And they would sell that off and put it in the stock market. And for me, I just looking at it and, you know, doing math just said, that's like, you'd have to have $6 million in an investment account at 5% to do the same thing as your dental practice. So if you could keep your dental practice and you could create systems and you knew how to invest in it and would reduce the stress, then it would make much more sense to grow and scale and invest in the dental practice. So there's a little bit of it, of me that's an idealist, to be honest with you. And I was like, I must put a stop to this. And so I started working with individuals, really showing them the numbers on if you invested back in the dental practice, if you understood where to invest in marketing. I'm not a marketing person, but I understand the financials of investing and acquisition costs and the average revenue. And so one of the greatest things, that, for instance, in the pandemic, I was saying in the pandemic, I got a lot of clients from it because I was like, double down, triple down. This is the time to invest in marketing. So as a business person, I ended up in this profession, fell in love with it. And because there's so much room for growth in this and just in paradigm, acumen, philosophy. And so what a great industry to be a part of. So I fell into it and now I'm glad to be in it for sure.
That's awesome. And you said something that really struck a nerve with me there about the COVID, because we are, and this was true in all businesses, I think, or most businesses, it was we 4X'd our business 4X'd during COVID or right after COVID because we did double down. We bet on our team. We didn't lay anybody off, right? We invested in future infrastructure when everybody else was pausing and shutting everything down. And I noticed that a lot of the doctors who did the same really capitalized. And it sounds like you saw the same thing and you kind of saw the writing on the wall. What are you seeing now with dental offices? What struggles are dental offices facing now that we've gotten through COVID, but now we have a labor shortage? How is that financially? How are you helping them through that?
I think that we are going through this great labor shortage, aren't we? And so there is always a challenge in this marketplace. I still think you have to have control of the numbers. It's still from a leadership standpoint, understanding. One of the largest things I see, even practices, I have practices that will come to me that are $15 million that do not have control of the numbers. And wow. So by having control of the numbers and understanding, hey, where do I need to invest? Because the return is still there. There is still strong return. And even if we're investing, for instance, in hygiene, you know, obviously a hygienist is more than, you know, the market's pushing up the price point. We were just talking about this actually at the conference yesterday, is this idea of, even if you were to lose margin on hygiene, there's still so much return and there's enough margin to be made up that it's still, as long as you know the numbers, you know where to push the needle. So yes, the market's changing, but I think by having control and having leadership of your own numbers, then you can make the decisions and push the investment where needed with control. Because I think if you don't have that control, then you feel out of control, which wakes you up at 3 a.m., but it's still going to be a difficult market. But you just need to know. But I think that what wakes people up at 3 a.m. is not having the peace of mind to know that they know their numbers and having control of it. We're going to get through this market. I was telling somebody the other day, I said, remember 2011 that they were talking about people with master's degrees working at Starbucks because they couldn't get a job? And you know, now it's like you could just make one phone call and get 20 jobs. So look, the market's going to change. We just need to have control at this time to learn how to adapt to the marketplace. But all marketplaces need adapting to. You just need to know and have the control to be able to do that.
Yeah, if it's not one end, it's another, right? So there was a time when there wasn't enough. If there was a time when there wasn't enough patients, right? Because people didn't really care about dentistry, and that was a problem. And now there's too many new patients and not enough dentists to see them, and there's a hygienist shortage. But that we've had a hygienist shortage before, right? I was talking to somebody who's been in the industry for 35 years, and they were like, "Oh, this already happened in the late 70s and the early 80s, and hygienists made all this money, and they got way over compensated of what they were getting before, and then it corrected." It went back the other way, right? So yeah, it's definitely ebbs and flows. I know one of the things that you guys focus on that I was very intriguing to me, and I know having control of your numbers is important, but really you need to have the right people over the numbers, right? So having getting the numbers is one thing, and then leadership is the next. What's your thoughts on dental leadership and how that works and how you help people in that area?
Well, leadership is this broad concept, but it actually is very strategic, because I think sometimes we use words like leadership and they get caught up with servant leadership sometimes, and then core values and mission. And sometimes we get it turns fluffy, but it's actually not. The idea of leadership, when I came into this industry, one of the things I saw right away was a lack of leadership. And that actually wasn't anyone's fault. It was because people were in the chair all day long. They couldn't actively lead the organization. They were deferring that to somebody else. And so there's oftentimes a lack of leadership. But I truly, you know, understanding where the business is going, understanding the strategy of the business, understanding strategy as a whole, one of the greatest lacks in this industry is lack of people understand operational effectiveness, but they don't understand strategy. They understand cost efficiency, but not strategy. So I think that there's this idea of leadership is understanding how to lead people, sharing that common vision, sharing why we're doing what we're doing, why you should be on my bus. And it's interesting. You say, you know, during this time, as we're trying to attract people into the organization, people will leave a job and go somewhere else because of someone's vision, because of the direction of the business, because they can see that there is leadership in the growth of the practice. Oftentimes showing somebody that there's a potential for growth in the organization and that you are willing to invest in the organization and you have a vision and you have there's a large group that I work with, just an amazing group. It started small and they're a very large group now. And they have the four core principles of leadership in their practice, and you know they've made it a hallmark. So I think people underestimate the power of being phenomenal leaders. And if we look to great organizations, those great organizations had powerful, amazing leaders. And sometimes people think leadership is just having all this charisma. Some of us have more or less charisma, but leadership is understanding your vision. It is communicating. It is communicating that. It is creating a delegation and a system to make decisions. It is understanding your numbers. It is all those things, because just like we wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, so do they oftentimes. And yeah. And knowing that there are leaders at the helm allows people to make it. And the day that comes, and it will, especially in this marketplace where the hygienist says, you know, this is a great market. Should I leave and go somewhere else and get more money? The only thing that will keep them at your practice is your vision, is the leadership. And it's probably, I would argue, more important than it ever has been if you want to retain top talent.
Yeah, totally agree. And something that you said there too, that dentistry struggled with for a long time, I kind of coined the phrase fractional CEO, right? Like no one offers fractional CEO services. And a lot of dentists have tried doing that, right? Where I'm in the chair for multiple hours a day and then trying to run the organization. And it's really hard. And another thing that I noticed as well is in that situation, they would have all these numbers, right? So they'd have this spreadsheet with like 5 billion numbers. And it wasn't a problem of not holding people accountable. It was like, hey, Eric, you're accountable for all these numbers and they're down. What are you going to do? And it's like, you might as well just say, like, tell me what pi is and just keep quoting it forever, right? Like it's really, really difficult. And it was putting people in weird spots, right? It was putting the leader in a weird spot. It was putting the team in the weird spot. Now with these groups emerging and having more of a decentralized or somebody who's not in the dental practice every single day, helping with some of the business side of things, that's obviously helped tremendously with those kind of things. But one thing that hasn't changed is promoting people from within, right? And that's still a very tricky, you got to be really careful, right? Just because you're an awesome hygienist doesn't mean that you can lead the hygiene team. And if I promote you to lead the hygiene team and you don't do a good job, if I try to demote you, then you're going to quit. So how what's your thoughts on like promoting within, bringing people from without? How do you help your clients tackle that?
Great, great question. One of the, you know, if you go to Jim Collins, this idea of good to great, one of the things that Jim Collins will say when he studied great organizations, they had rigorous standards. And leadership is understanding rigorous standards. I think sometimes it's difficult for leadership and leaders and the doctored owners to see that one of the greatest things you can do for your team is to have rigorous standards. And if the person doesn't meet the position, everybody gets hurt. And so it's sometimes the other day, we were just having this conversation where I said, you know, if we don't have the right person inside the organization, then we need to go out. Now, certainly if inside the organization, that person's there, but the first thing we do is actually set the standards for the position. What is required for this position? What does this need to look like? What are the true KPIs and those types of things and the standards of this position? And do we then have the person to meet that? What often happens in a dental practice is they say, well, I know Susie doesn't have that, but you know, she's really a great person and she's driven and she really cares. So we'll try to make her the head of operations for a 17 office. You know, it's like, hold on. She doesn't have the background. And that's not really, it's not that we don't care about Susie, because we do, but that's actually not fair to Susie, because we're not setting her up for success. And then we're not helping the rest of the organization, because the best thing we can do from the organization is to make sure that we put the organization on the right path. And so what I would say is that inside the organization, we look at that position. We look at what's required of that position. We also look at what I call organizational ceiling, because that organizations have a ceiling. Even if you have a head of operations today, let's just say you have a head of operations or a director of operations or whatever you want to call that person, and you're at 3 locations, it's going to look different when you're at 15 locations. And even if someone says, well, I don't have a director of operations, I have an office manager, that's fine too. Still, you're going to hit a level of growth where you say, we cannot grow with our current leadership team, with our current executive team, whether even that's 3 people or whatever it ends up being. So when you get to that place, I also think when you hire that person or put that person in that role, you also have to think about long-term. So if I put someone in a role today, even if I think she might be able to, or he might be able to do it, But if I think in a year from now, that person is not going to be successful in this position, then I'm setting them up for failure. Mm-hmm. And that's not good either.
Yeah. And that's where vision really comes in, right? If I'm just willy-nilly out here just doing whatever, then I don't even know where I'm going to be in a year. But if I have a clear vision and we have a roadmap for that vision, that's huge. And it really helps set people up for success. There's nothing worse as being a leader and then setting someone up for failure. You don't know you're doing it. And then afterwards that's you look back and you go, man, I literally just lost this great person. It was my fault because I put him into a position, you know, and it feels, I don't think anybody likes that. There's nobody who enjoys that, but it happens all the time. One other thing that I've noticed, and I'd be interested in your opinion on this, because this is relatively new for a lot of people, is that, so you got a lot of groups and they're building and they focus a lot on culture and vision and leadership, right? And they have that at the DSO level and they have this great culture. You meet the people, it's like, man, I would like to work there. But then you have the practices, and the practices are not as good. They're a dumpster fire, right? And people are turning over like crazy and you can't recruit fast enough. And you really have two different worlds because they're really facing two different obstacles, right? One mm-hmm. is serving the office. The other one is serving the patient. Have you experienced that? Have you seen that? And I would just love your thoughts on that.
It's a great thought and a great question. Once again, I think that when we started, you said earlier, talked about decentralization and centralization. And so that's a challenge that not just dental organizations face, but larger organizations face. We see this across the business spectrum, is that as you start to grow, how do you take that culture? How do you take the direction, the leadership, and in a sense, decentralize it oftentimes as well. And when we start to look at, you know, growing that, I think sometimes we start to think we have this amazing executive team. And then as we start to push down, what does that actually look like as we start to push through the ranks? And it happens in an organization. So when I start to look at this, I start to say, you do have to go back and look at it and say, where is decision-making coming from? And if it's completely centralized in one location, and then that's just got to push down. It's like that whole thing where you're supposed to, you know, share a secret and it goes to the next person, the next person. Same thing happens in an organization because it starts to get diluted over time. So I would say in those organizations, you still have to look at some things being decentralized, or you've really got to be able to have a communication system to which you're communicating so often that it's not getting diluted, because that's what's happening, is the messaging's getting diluted over a period of time. And by the time it gets down to that front office person who is new to the team, there's not a lot left in there. So how do you decentralize some in those situations, put the right system in place so that you can make sure that that's being spread throughout the organization? Now, it's always going to be a challenge. It's the same thing with a founder. If a founder leaves an organization, if you sell an organization, there's something about being a founder versus an owner. Hey, there's that vision and passion, and then an owner is just different. And so one of the biggest challenges, I was just actually doing a course through the Wharton School, and you know, this is Ivy League education. They're saying one of the biggest, they were doing the studies on literally the effect that happens when founders leave an organization and how do you try to keep that in. So I do think that it is as you grow organizations, what was the original vision? How far did we come from that? And then how do we keep it in place? And then how do we decentralize that to some aspect within the organization and communicate that? Because these are all challenges to face, but they are things that can be overcome. But it's one of those things, though, I would argue that you can never step away from. You can never let go. It's one of those fundamentals that have to be completely looked at over and over and over again.
Yeah. And I think the reason too is, like, I had a conversation with somebody who's grown practices and also worked as a consultant, and he was a dentist, and we were talking about, like, when I was a kid, so my parents were taught by their parents to get a job, stay at that job forever, and then buy one house and stay in that house forever, and then retire with a pension, right? Like, that was common practice and knowledge that was passed down. Even to me when I was a kid, it was like, this is the blueprint, figure this out. And now that's not what the culture teaches anymore. In fact, if you go online and watch TikTok videos and things like that, HR people are like, hey, you should go out and shop your resume every year to see what your worth is. And you should be, and if you change jobs at least four times over this time period, you'll always end up 30% more in the positive of, you know, of your salaries and things like that, which is a totally different mindset. Like, you're talking about two different kinds of mindsets. And so working on culture isn't just about, yeah, I want to make sure you understand my vision. It's also about understanding the people that you have working for you who might have a total disconnect from whatever you've been taught or what you think is going on. I find that fascinating. Have you had any situations where you've had people who were just disconnected from this generation that we're dealing with right now?
I think that there's always a generational shift, but then there's also different people within generations. But I will say this is that there's a company, the first firm that I ever worked at when I came out of college, it was a firm that we called it literally the firm. The reason why is nobody ever left. And I got to tell you this, it was so neat because they had a 4% turnover rate. And this was a multi-billion dollar company, and they had a 4% turnover rate. So you got to imagine multi-state. How do you do that in a multi-billion dollar organization? Well, what they did, and I'm not saying necessarily we would do this in your organization, I'm just saying this is getting in front of a problem, is they would go survey the market every year. And then what they would do is they would increase to meet the market every year. And then what they would do is then increase that more than the market by some percentage. Well, they understood that turnover is a heavy cost to an organization. Yeah. And they did the studies on the reduction of turnover, which is cost efficiency. And they said, we'd be better off to increase their pay than to have the turnover. So, they did a lot more for, you know, I always joke with people. I said, look, they had pie-eating contests at a gym, and they had a lot of other things that they had going on. They used to have a cart that they would roll between the cubicles with like muffins. I mean, it was just a really cool culture, but nobody ever left because the benefits were so good, the way they treated people. That is important to look at the cost of turnover. I do think that needs to be looked at in an organization, because I think sometimes we get short-sighted from the executive seat and say, well, you know, they haven't asked for a raise, and so I'm keeping my margins where they need to be, not looking at that eventually turns into turnover, which then has a huge cost to the organization. So I do think that it's sometimes we follow the herd versus being in front of those types of movements. And we something that happens in dental that doesn't happen in a lot of other industries to this level is in dentistry, we have this commodity type mindset. And what I mean by that is people go and they share the exact same information. They will ask somebody who's failing at something, what are you doing? And do the exact same thing as them. And so it's like, that doesn't typically happen in a lot of other areas. And so, you know, I always tell doctors, don't ask the person who just lost 5 hygienists what they're paying hygienists. Like, that's not who you ask. It's the person who's attracted 5 hygienists who you should be asking. So sometimes I think we just need a better set of questions.
Yeah.
But we also need to step sometimes outside the industry and say, hey, what are other organizations maybe outside of the industry doing that we could maybe borrow from? Because right now, retention is important. Yes, vision is so important. Leadership. And look, no matter how driven you are, how much of a great leader you are, no matter how passionate you are, people are going to leave. And that's just the hard truth of it. And sometimes you can't even understand why they would leave, because you're like, do you understand how great we are? But they will. And it does happen. However, I do believe as business leaders, we can get in front of this. And I think we can do a lot to it. I think what we have to do is not have herd mentality and not commoditize information, but be unique thinkers within the space.
I love the way you presented that from the firm there. And that is so true. If you can get ahead on, it's like, you're going to pay the money one way or another, right? We can pay it in raises we can pay it in turnover. So what one's better? It's better just to give them the raises, right? And so that's a totally different mindset. And one usually not present. Like, you don't hear people talking that way a lot in the dental industry, to your point. And it's very, very fair. I do know that one of the things I've watched in tech over the years, tech has been dealing with the problem that dental's facing right now for years. There's never been There's never been enough people in tech. There's never been enough. They literally pay people to learn how to do tech because they're so like needing of more programmers and developers. And so they've been dealing with it for years. And one of the things, I mean, salaries are just high in that industry because of that. But they have the advantage of having technology, which is deflationary. So they're selling cell phones for cheaper, even though they're more powerful now. Dentistry has some of that, right? Like, so I saw yesterday someone posted a Facebook picture. They were at a front desk of a dental office and they had someone from the Philippines on a screen, on a Zoom screen, checking patients in, right? So they removed the human from there. It's still a human there, but it's on a computer. And so there's stuff like that you can do. But what, like right now, with if I'm paying the doctor and the hygienist and the dental assistants and everybody's getting a pay raise, the insurance is crunching down, giving me less money, rent's going to go up. I mean, everything's going up and I'm getting less. How are you helping clients, or what are you seeing clients that are doing that are creative to work through that problem?
Well, I think that when we get into exactly what you just stated was business strategy, because cost efficiency is a model. You can see Aspen moving into cost efficiency, right? That's a model, right? We can look at when we start looking at implants, depending on where you're going, right? Depending on the business model, there's a lot of companies who've moved towards the cost efficiency. How do we get people have implants for cheaper? How do we give dentistry for cheaper? The problem is you're in a sense, which is fine. That's a fine model. And in fact, you know, you can look at great organizations. IKEA has a cost efficiency model. Southwest has a cost efficiency model. There's nothing wrong with having a cost efficiency model. But what ends up happening is when we get into perceived value, so now we start to go to the other end of the spectrum, which is perceived value. Well, if we're getting into true business strategy, we've got to start looking at what actually goes into perceived value. So here's it's kind of some of the challenges. And I was talking to an oral surgery group about this recently. So let's go back down to, there's Clear Choice who tries to push the implant down, right? And then the oral surgeon says, hey, look, no. If I was to do anything for cost efficiency, then I'm seen as poor quality, which is a mindset, okay? And so, it's not necessarily, I promise you, but here's what ends up happening. When we get into perceived value, the first thing that they think is, now we're into differentiation. Now, differentiation is difficult and sometimes very expensive. But when you get into differentiate, when I ask a group of doctors, what makes you different? Here's what they tell me. I talk to the patient. I spend time with them. I give them a good, you know, I take care of them.
We clean. We clean our office really good. Or I went to college, I went to this really good college.
That's right. So, you know, one of the things that I help people with is truly understanding differentiation strategy. Because if you're going to push into that, so now everything's moving down. And if you have larger groups, you have economies of scale within those groups. And now you're starting to look at a marketplace where when you start in this, even consulting, I kind of laughed at this with someone the other day. I said, even the consulting, it's the same commoditized information that keeps being put out. So it's interesting. It's like all the dentists that are trying to grow to some degree went to the same boot camp. So they took the same commoditized information and they share that information. And then what ends up happening is they all say, we're trying to be different. I'm like, no, you all look the same. So the answer to your question, which is if we're not trying to run a cost efficiency, that's what I meant at the beginning when I said implants is a clear choice. But when we're looking at our models, we have to say if we're moving toward differentiation, which is difficult and is expensive. I remember a doctor recently was like, let's create a differentiation strategy. He had about 30 minutes. I was like, if it was that easy, like we would all just have a differentiation strategy in 30 minutes. It's difficult work. But done well, if you look at, let's step outside of dental for a minute. Let's go straight, which is a little bit different on the clinical side, but plastic surgery has stayed independent because it has high perceived value. That is the differentiation, right? Nobody wants the discount facelift. It doesn't tend to work out well.
$9.99 for the nose job.
But in dentistry, it's a little more difficult sometimes because we expect there to be a certain level of care. And so differentiation really comes with team. It really comes with experience, but it's not by being kind. It's other things that are very unique. It can be utilizing technology. It can be the way we communicate with the marketplace. It can be a lot of different things. But if we're just trying to compete on price and trying to just be a nice, clean office, it takes a lot of capital because that's a difficult model to really stand out in. You can get a lot of patients coming in and that's okay, but you're going to have problems when you're in cost efficiency. Even cost efficiency, you got to find some way to differentiate even with a cost efficiency model.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me. And this is such a good answer. And I think about the dentist that I've talked to over the years, dentistry does copy itself, right? So there's a lot of people who are replicating the model and people struggle to say why they're different. But at the same time, like, how many dentists are open at 7 p.m. on a Saturday? You know what I mean? Like, how many dentists have same day availability? How many do IV sedation? How many, like, I could go through and I could give you a bunch of stuff that if you did these things, the market would respond positively to you, right? Because no one else is, you wouldn't have any competition. So you'd get 100% of that market at that time, but dentistry doesn't think that way. With your business background, where's the disconnect there?
I truly believe it's in going back again. I do believe it's in share. It's this, when I keep using the word commoditization of information, I truly mean they're sharing the same information. We can talk. I saw a doctor just use social awareness, taking care of the community, taking care of the environment and watch her numbers explode. There's a lot of ways to differentiate. Like you said, sedation, we can use clinical means, we can use bringing authority. There's a lot of different ways to perceive value. Price, just increasing price, it changes perceived value. There's a lot of things you can do to differentiate from a business standpoint. And what I would say is that you just rattled off four or five things, yeah. Right? Like just yeah, like that.
Yeah. Staying so open late on the weekends or whatever.
Well, I'll tell you a story. So years ago, a young lady, I get this phone call, and this young lady was sold into a practice that literally, I don't know who the broker was, but it was not good karma. Let's just put it that way. Okay. And so whoever made this deal, it was a horrible. I get this phone call of this young lady, and this was years and years ago, but long story short, the lady is she's in the red. I said, what would you like to happen? And she said, I just want to be in the black. I just want to keep losing. I mean, she was probably a month away from closing down the doors. It was a bad situation. So it's interesting. So she was in an older population. That she was in. So I looked right at her and I said, I want you to open Sunday. And I said, well, are you willing to open on Sunday? And she said, yes. I said, open on Sunday. Watch what happens. And she was like, I've got nothing to lose. And she had no children at the time. She was like, I'm not doing anything else on Sunday. All of a sudden, overnight, she exploded because Sunday, nobody was open. And I said, look,
she was probably the only dentist within 5 hours that even or more.
And so when Sunday something was happening, and oftentimes, especially with an older population, things happen to dental work. And so anyhow, she was slammed. She was making so much money on Sunday. Well, of course, then we invested the money properly and grew marketing and all the other things because she had no capital at first to do anything with. So we had to do it purely organically. And so overnight, I will tell you that young lady within 24 months was named the businesswoman of the year. So it's interesting, right? Had she have copied everybody else, she wouldn't have a business. But because she was willing to do what others won't do, and isn't that true what differentiation is, being willing to do what others won't do? And if you copy everybody else and you copy what they're doing to try to step outside and have a higher perceived value, it's difficult. It's challenging. So you have to be willing to create a model that's different that other people aren't willing to do. But even things like, you know, the Ritz-Carlton is kind of an interesting one because people don't think they can have quality on scale. And interesting in dentistry, I still don't think that people think they can have high perceived value on scale. But I will say that, you know, I walked into one day, I was staying at the Ritz-Carlton Lake Oconee in Georgia, and I walk into this, it was supposed to be, a workout yoga room. And there was this big giant whiteboard. It was like their master game plan of customer service. And of course I took pictures because I'm a business guy, but it was interesting to see like the training that goes into that experience and how much time. And the truth is, if you look at great organizations truly are training organizations. The United States military, whether it's the Ritz-Carlton, even if it's Chick-fil-A, I mean, look at Chick-fil-A took perceived value. It did it in fast food. Nobody thought. But then one of the things that when we start thinking about, I will go back to perceived value again. Let's go look at Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A does something that's unique that nobody else is willing to do that actually shows their values, which is being closed on Sunday. Yep. It's interesting about that Sunday thing. It is what drives perceived value. People think higher of them and literally will are willing to pay more for fast food.
And wait.
They close on Sunday. And wait.
And I'm looking at the line. Yeah.
They have to put like freeways into the drive-thru. So, I mean, the chicken's good, but I mean, and by the way, everybody always wants Chick-fil-A on Sunday, interestingly enough.
Well, that's what I mean. They're willing. People are willing to wait past Sunday and come back on Monday, right? Like
social
if anybody
else. Responsibility.
That's social responsibility.
That's using social responsibility to increase perceived value. That's a differentiation strategy. So you, if you can do it in fast food, why can't you do it in dentistry? And so it kind of begs the question, you know, it's almost like there's in some ways, and I don't mean race to the bottom in a disrespectful way. I just mean that, that sometimes prices are raising and with a cost of labor increasing or it can affect margins, obviously. And so now we start to go like, how do you move forward in a marketplace that's more competitive, that has higher labor costs, that, you know, right, we start to see challenges from insurance. And so there are ways to compete, but it does take, go back to leadership again, it takes leadership. And that's why I think leadership really means so much more than this idea of like pumping everybody up, right? Leadership means a lot of these things that truly lead an organization through a time like this and come out on the other side better than you came into it.
Well, when we started the conversation, we started on mindset, right? You got to have the right mindset. If you think you're going to lose, you're going to lose. But the way I presented that question is the way the dental industry really, a lot of people, not everybody, approaches the problem is like, costs are high. We can't do this. We can't do that. We're very limited. What are we going to do? And it doesn't leave you with a lot of options. But what you did is you went to the top line and said, well, how do we increase the top line?
That's right.
We close open on this day, or we close on this day, or we do whatever to get that top line up. It's the same problem. Again, it's just the opposite end of the stick that you're approaching it from. And depending on what end of the stick you approach it from is going to determine a whole bunch about how you move and how you operate as a business. And I think that's, again, just back to the point, that's really what's in the you see it in the business world all the time, right? Like people figure it out. And in dentistry, more and more people are figuring it out. But it's exciting because I think dentistry is so exciting because it is a little bit behind. And so some of the things that are already out there are already known, and then they're getting applied and then it works. It kind of makes it cool to be involved with. Another thought on this, and this is a very tactical question. Have you worked with people who have systematized their culture and really made it so that they can control it like a number? Have you seen that?
Absolutely. But I will tell you this. So Jim Collins has, this idea, he talked about in Good to Great, this idea of a flywheel. And I will tell you that businesses that really, here's one of the biggest problems about businesses. People don't know what made them successful. And watch this in dentistry. If I sit down with an organization, even an organization that's doing $80 million, and I say, what made you successful? You'd be surprised how many times they would say, we take care of the patients. And when we take that thing apart, what we start to realize, every organization's different. Now, there is an organization where I would put at the top of that flywheel, that process, I would put in there, culture, because that is actually their number one driver. Their economic driver was culture. And so not everyone's economic driver is culture, even though sometimes we think it is, it's not. And so it's not always patient care, by the way, either. And there's different economic drivers based on your business model. And when you start to actually study the business, you realize that, oh my gosh, we didn't actually realize what made us successful. I saw an organization that a gentleman came in to run operations, but he was from a different economic model in dentistry. And he came in and completely just tore this thing apart because he was trying to take one model and put it over another, not understanding what had made the business successful. And they call it Bergman's trap, which is this idea of it's this thought process, which is one of the worst things in business is to not know how you became successful. And oftentimes businesses don't. And it's one reason why I was saying earlier, why founders leave and things fall apart. It's oftentimes that founder's vision that actually made it successful. So when you go to culture, if the culture was the driver of the economic success, then you've got to figure out how to replicate that. But you also have to weigh all your decisions against it. Because as you move forward, you say, is this our current way of doing things? Amazon does an amazing job of this, by the way. I was telling someone the other day, I said, look, Amazon could come out tomorrow with Amazon Premier, right? And start selling maybe Gucci's or something. But But no, they know their economic driver is number of visits. That's the economic driver. That's what keeps it going. I had a room full of like 50 people the other day. I was talking to it. I said, how many of you went to Amazon today? And they were like, all of them raised their hand. I was like, how many of you went like twice today? So it pushes that, right? So if they change that, let's just say somebody came in and started messing with that and said, well, why don't we sell Premier goods too? We have all these visits. Well, then the reason why we come there is because costs are low. And it's factored. Yep. You go to Amazon, if you try to find in the higher priced goods, they don't even have a drop down that says price from high to low. And they do that for a reason, because it would change what made them successful, that got them through the dot-com boom. Boom and bust. So they didn't change through through the decades. They haven't changed. It's what's made them so successful. And so it is important for organizations to realize what has made them successful, what's making them successful. And if culture is that driver and it really is what's made you successful, then how do we make every decision weighing in the investment of culture as one of our chief economic drivers? Because if we start pushing all our investment to another thing, then what we'll find is culture will slip, which is what made us successful. And we won't understand why we're kind of losing our momentum, and that momentum could mean a lot of things. It could be economic and otherwise.
Yeah.
So there's so much in that is understanding what's made you successful. So culture, if that is culture is always important, don't get me wrong. But for some organizations, as its success, it is more important than others. And so if that is the chief economic driver, then you have to understand that the investment of that comes before all else.
Yeah, because Amazon's a great point. So their economic driver's visits to the website being competitive, but their vision is being the most customer-centric website. And so they make all of their decisions through that lens. And so now when they get bad press for not treating their employees well not paying people a lot of money at the warehouses, people don't really get upset, because it's like, well, no, because they're creating a perfect experience. The experience on the back end is horrible. The experience on the front end is great. And it's also cost effective. And so they let certain fires burn, to your point, and other fires they don't let burn, because no, we need to fix that right away, because this is what, I mean, Jeffrey Bezos, when he started, he said, I'm going to make the most customer-centric business ever created on the planet. And he's done it. Like, he literally did it. And they would be way bigger if China didn't keep him out and let Alibaba roll over there. But Amazon would just come in and crush him. But so I find that really, really fascinating. You broke that down really well. So I appreciate you doing that. And I always tell people, if you can get me to understand it, then we did a good job, because all of our listeners will get it for sure. Well, tell us, if someone wants to reach out to you and get some help on their dental practices, we work with a lot of groups. Most of our listeners are, you know, 2 to 5 locations, and they're trying to scale up to, you know, 10 to 20 locations. What are your, how do they get a hold of you? How do they get some support from you and chat with you?
And that's exactly, 90% of the people that come to us are somewhere between 2 to 5 locations looking to go. We just had someone go from 9 or 10 locations. Like, I mean, look, you can move dramatically. You can move 10 locations, 20 locations. So there's people that want to, but there's so many, what I think is great in this podcast we brought out is, I think it's so simple to break down into going from 2 to 10 to, but I think some of the things we brought out in this podcast, and I'm so thankful to be on here, really brought to light, before you go to make that decision, there are so many things to consider to do this right, because oftentimes somebody can go from 1 location to 5 locations or 2 to 10 and wake up and go, what am I doing? So I think that's great. To get a hold of us, TireLeadership.com is a great website to go to. Great information. And honestly, there's a button to push, and we can reach out to somebody. They can send an email to info@TireLeadership.com. We've got a great team that will respond back immediately. Those are probably the quickest ways. And our team is always ready to help out anyone who's looking to really move the needle.
Well, Eric, I really appreciate it. I learned a lot today. I loved your business perspective and your mindset and everything that you're bringing to dental. I really appreciate you.
I feel the same about you. I appreciate you having me. This has been great. I really enjoy. I could do this for the next like 3 hours.
Me too.
So thanks for having me. We'll talk soon.